You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. Today's guest is legendary columnist Michael Musto, here to talk about Diana Ross and the Supremes, sing and perform Funny Girl.
Michael Musto is best known for his landmark Village Voice column, La Dolce Musto,
which ran for over 29 years. Oh, he must be so tired.
He has been a first-hand account for so many important cultural events in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s through the present day. Basically, in my opinion, if Michael Musto doesn't report on something in New York City, booyakasha, it didn't happen.
He gave early vital career coverage to such groundbreaking performers like RuPaul, Ever Heard of Her, Kiki and Her, Bridget Everett, Jackie Hoffman, Bianca Del Rio, and Peppermint.
It's recording?
Yeah.
Okay, it just doesn't look like it's recording.
Yeah, it's just really zoomed out, so it looks like it's going really slow.
It's like my ass. If you get enough blocks away, it looks really tight.
Oh, speaking of, I have a present for you.
I have a present for you.
If I can.
Also related to that comment, actually, weirdly
oh,
enough.
Oh, my.
Yeah, are you going
if
first?
If I can get to it.
I'm so excited.
Don't get excited. It's nothing big. Maybe I should say that. Maybe they want to be a sponsor.
Well, I don't care if it's big. I just want it to be expensive.
Okay, I'm going to give it to you, and you have to read what it says.
Is this, like, juice for running? My God. Okay, I thought this was, like, something a marathon runner would, like, have, like, for, like, carbs. It's this, like, little white square thing with, like, a very classy-looking font, and it has, like, it's, like, a paper envelope with, like, some kind of a fluid inside, and there's a screw-off thing at top, so I assumed it was, you know, like, carbs. But it is Future Method, the Science of Sex, Disposable Anal Douche Solution, fragrance-free. Wow. Oh, there's very complicated instructions. Thank you for
You're welcome. It's Future Method, which is a new product.
How does this
product.
Go in you? Oh, through
well,
this
you
little
just,
insert.
Well, you, or you just, if you have a tool, if you have an existing vessel, you can put it in there and then use
Interesting.
It. Through your...
Interesting. Thank you.
Anyway, but my friend Rachel she's the art director on this project that they're doing, so I did this photo shoot with her today.
Oh, it was a free sample?
Yeah.
My gift to you is a free sample, too. It's, like, weirdly related to what I got you, though.
Okay, bring your mind.
It's from Patti LuPone, cleaning out her house, gave me a couple
I'm
of
so
boxes
glad you
of
said
stuff.
House.
And here is one
I'm
for
so
you.
Excited.
It's a little Chinese food looking gift is it, box. Is it's
it,
red with gold stars.
An egg roll, Mr. Goldstone?
It may be that, yeah. Let's see. Well, this is all goes together weirdly.
Oh my God, it's some sort of lingerie item. Oh my God! Oh my God, it is a LuPone Gypsy G string.
City Center opening
City Center,
night
baby.
Gift.
Oh my God, I hope Patti has not worn this.
I was
or
assured.
Maybe I hope she does.
I was assured that it has not been worn.
Wow. It's very small. I wonder if it'll fit me.
You're going to have to do a real
tuck. Wow. Let's see. This is wonderful. Thank you. Have you seen anything good?
Yes. I have seen. I went to the Hal Prince exhibit at the New York Public Library.
The New York Public Library? How was that?
It was wonderful. I've taken a deep dive this week because on the recommendation of friend of the pod, David Levy, I read I had already read the other Elaine Page. Because it's a book with pages. I'd already read, that
Elaine,
name must not be spoken.
The Elaine Pages.
The Elaine Pages. I already had read, you know, Elaine Page actually did write a book, but it's a picture book. I'm not kidding.
She should do a pop-up book.
Brenda did that with dogs. But Elaine Stritch, I already read the other Elaine Stritch memoir that's more of like a straight up, not memoir, biography. But this one is called The End of Pretend, and I read it on David Levy's recommendation, and it's a wonderful remembrance of the last 5 years of Stritch's life from a personal friend, and it's just...
Was she just, like, living in the Carlisle the whole time, or was that in Michigan?
It's both. It starts when she's still at the Carlisle, before she was really going far downhill. Mm-hmm. He meets her. He's a college professor in New Jersey, and he brings her to do a master class with his students, and they become friends. Mm-hmm. And then he, from time to time, visits her at the Carlisle, and then she starts to failing health, and then she moves to Michigan, and he goes several times and stays at her house in Michigan, her condo. And it's just a very detailed portrait of his experience of her, and she comes across very vividly and very much herself to the final days, and I was really moved by it, and it just... It's so wonderful to read. You know, I never read anymore, and I was such a reader as a kid, and it's such a meditative and great experience. But this particularly because I'm so fascinated by Elaine Stritch, and it just threw me into a deep dive over the Halloween weekend of reading. I reread Jim Gavin's wonderful book, Intimate Nights, all about, especially I was really into the stuff about the cabaret scene evolving throughout the 70s and 80s in New York City. Especially the sort of birth of Barbara Cook from a sort of faded Broadway ingenue to a world-class cabaret and concert star in the 70s. And I just went down a huge Barbara Cook rabbit hole on YouTube, which led me into a Sondheim rabbit hole. So it was perfect prep for unprotected anal sex. for the New York Public Library.
Hal Prince
exhibit, which was really fascinating. I mean, you get to read, like, you know, detailed handwritten letters between Hal and Steve and Hal and Richard Rodgers and Andrew Lloyd Webber and Candor and Ebb and great little strange, I don't know if they were library or public television, little video interviews in different little TVs with headphones all along the walls, but that are, you know, for example, Liza and Candor and Ebb talking, reminiscing about Flora the Red Menace, and this is them talking in the 70s. So I'd never seen this little conversation before.
I love that.
It's just very cool, and people should all go check it out. And
was that already planned, or did it happen as a result of his death?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm sure that's knowable.
Yeah.
We need an intern.
We'll get the intern on that. Jane, that's fun. I need to go see that.
Feel like I saw a show, though.
Yeah, you did, right?
Didn't I? We saw Marilyn May.
Marilyn May, fabulous.
Marvelous.
We need to get her as a guest.
I mean,
I really do think, like, Marilyn's, like, my favorite live performer, maybe.
Yeah.
And...
That's what we have to get her. We can squeeze her in the season for the P-Town section.
Yes, for sure.
We'll just cheat and record her here in the city.
Right, right. Keep moving, boys.
We have an ongoing fantasy, because in P-Town we stayed at the same hotel that Marilyn stays at.
Anchor Inn.
Where we have stayed before also simultaneously with her the previous time. And we love the Anchor Inn in Provincetown. That's sponsor, friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Anchor Inn.
And had all the boys and dogs.
Molly and Beau.
Those are the dogs. The boys are Chris and I'm Facebook Mike? Friends with him. Michael, yes. Chris and Michael. We'll edit that in post.
Chris and Michael.
Anyway, Chris is so adorable. I'm in love with him. Michael's very cute, too. Anyway, we always stay at the Anchor Inn. And we've been there at the same time as Marilyn May, and we're so obsessed with her. And first of all, she's just a legend in P-Town. Like, you'd think she was Lady Gaga walking down Commercial Street.
Right, everyone's just like,
stopped every few steps. But she has this, like, incredibly, like many of the, like, Broadway divas and, like, you know, singers. She's just a really salty personality. Not in, like, a bad way. She's incredibly lovely and warm and generous. But she's a straight shooter. And
she doesn't
suffer fools.
Tells
and
it
she
like
calls
it,
like she sees it, you know. And I just, one of my first memories of her in P-Town was, like, sitting on the porch of the Anchor Inn. And it was family week, and, like, all these families were walking by with strollers, you know. And Marilyn just looks at me and she goes, "Where are all the fucking guys?" But so anyway, we have this whole ongoing joke, Daniel and I, this bit we do, that we just imagine Marilyn just, like, having no time for us, and us just being like, "Oh my god, Marilyn, like, when you sang the medley from King and I," and her being like, "Keep moving, boys." Or, like, us being like, "Marilyn, can I just tell you?" And,
Just like smoking a cigarette, like Mike Ehrmantraut.
She doesn't even smoke.
Better Call Saul.
Like Mike Ehrmantraut and Better Call Saul.
Like she takes out a hit on us because we won't leave her alone.
Yeah. So we just love her.
We love Marilyn.
We just love her.
I love her so much. So much. Those albums on Spotify, baby, check them out.
So good. Also on Apple Music. I am an Apple Music person.
You're so stupid.
I'm an Apple Music person.
Didi don't.
Why shouldn't I be on Apple Music?
Oh, I mean, that definitely scans.
I don't like that.
Oh my God, I'm crying.
Okay. I don't want to be like those people.
Apple Music people?
I want it both ways. I want to be the way I am, but I want you to think I'm cool.
I think you're cool the way you are. Which... maybe you don't think that's cool. Oh. But maybe that's why I like you, because you don't need to be cool like everyone else. Mm. The same type of cool.
As I said on my senior page in my high school yearbook, why should I paint like you or anyone else? James Lapine. Welcome to Broken Records.
Thank you.
And we're very excited to have a true New York institution, an icon, a legend.
A landmark.
These words get
I'd rather be employed. Yeah, well, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, a wonderful weekly column on New Now Next that all live for. And you'd see him on anytime anybody's talking about anything interesting in pop culture, certainly anything gay or theater related. There's Michael Musto. And we're honored to have him right here with us today.
It's an honor to be had. And Mike, can I start right away about my favorite album?
Yes.
My two favorites. One of them is Laura Nero and LaBelle. Mm-hmm. It's called Gonna Take a Miracle, but that's not a show tune album.
Wow.
But we love Laura Nero here too.
And LaBelle.
My favorite album of all, other favorite album is Diana Ross and the Supremes, and this is the full title, Sing and Perform Funny Girl.
Sing and Perform.
Yes. And Diana Ross has always been my favorite star. I mean, she just sparkles. She is pure showbiz. But she also has the profundity and the gravitas, in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, not only were the Supremes at this point putting out incredible hit records like Baby Love and Come See About Me, but Berry Gordy, the head of Motown and Diana's man, had them putting out these special albums, these theme albums. They did one about Liverpool. They did We Remember Sam Cooke. They did the Supremes sing Rogers and
Hart.
Yeah,
that one I had.
Which is how I found out about songs like Thou Swell and Mountain
Wow.
Blue. And that made top 20 on the Billboard chart.
Did it.
But the Funny Girl one bombed. It made 150. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It was the lowest rated Supremes record of all time, whether specialty or hit.
Were people turned off by the Broadway connection? Was that the issue?
I think people had a hard time thinking of Diana as Fanny Bryce because she's black. But she pulls it off. She's brilliant.
Oh, it's so good.
And Barbara Streisand was not happy about this, by the way. This was before the movie Funny Girl came out.
Oh, so she didn't have a secure hold. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? If you've heard the album, first of all, it's done as one continuous track, except for when you have to turn it over. Mm-hmm. And people, do you remember albums? And also, it's done with a Motown flavor.
Yeah,
so that it's,
for sure.
It's the Funny Girl score with a Motown flavor. And the two Supremes, which at this point were Mary Wilson and Cindy Birdsong, Flo Ballard, a.k.a. Effie, was gone.
Yeah.
If you've seen Dreamgirls. And they also enhanced their vocals with other vocals. When they re-released the album years later as a CD, they isolated Mary and Cindy's vocals. Mm-hmm. But I don't even want to hear that. I like the original where it's like a chorus of backup singers.
That's what I know. That's what's on iTunes, I think, or Apple Music is the chorus behind her.
Yeah, and Diana does it with the Yiddishisms. She does the Oy Vey's and she pulls it off. And she does the upbeat numbers like Cornet Man beautifully.
Oh, yeah.
She does the ballads like Music That Makes Me Dance beautifully.
In everywhere,
I mean, it's funny knowing the album that anyone would think whether or not she was appropriate to play Fanny Brice, because it's not what it's about at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, and some of the songs are really done in a new vibe. I mean, I think like If a Girl Isn't Pretty, which is just like a throwaway number in the show, is like a big Motown anthem on the album, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. that one starts with Mary and Cindy going, "If a girl isn't pretty, mm-hmm. really pretty."
All she gets in life is pity and a pat. Any nose with deviation is a crime against the nation. Throw her into jail or maybe drown the cat.
In the days when you would do the Diana Ross show, did you ever have any of those songs in it?
No, I thought it was even too obscure. The most obscure I would get was I'm Living in Shame, which was their follow-up to Love Child.
So, okay, how did you discover this album? You were already a Diana Ross fan before
yes.
it came out.
Mm-hmm. There was something called, like, the Record of the Month Club or something. They would send you flyers in the mail, and you would pick, like, three albums, and they would come in the mail.
This is
and
like
they
Columbia, would forget, BMG.
Yes, the stuff, Columbia. Yeah. Yeah, and they would forget to bill you. For years, I was scamming free albums and never had to pay.
Well, that's amazing.
Their loss was America's gain.
Right. Thank you. So, of course, I picked anything with Diana Ross. And yeah. I also later picked, like, Tapestry by Carole King.
Oh, yeah.
All these great albums.
Mm-hmm. It's too late, baby, now. It's too late. Though we really did try to make it. Something inside has died. And I can't hide. And I just can't fake it.
But so you were not a Broadway fan, though, because you didn't know Rodgers and Hart until you got that.
Well, I was 13. You know, the Rodgers and Hart was a little before my time. But I was a Broadway fan in that I would see on the Ed Sullivan Variety Show every Sunday mm-hmm. numbers from Maggie Flynn or whatever terrible mm-hmm. show. And I just loved it. I don't care if it was good or bad. You know, he would have later on No, No, Nanette and every big musical.
And so you were a fan of Barbra Streisand already and Funny Girl.
Yeah, I love Barbra Streisand.
So is this like peanut butter and chocolate coming together for you to hear about this album?
Yeah, it was like a Fluffernutter sandwich. It's like my two favorite things, like Funny Girl and Diana
it's
Ross.
Fluffers.
It was too good to be true. And it was visually beautiful, the album. It was a fold-out, and it had gorgeous photos of the three girls. Mm. Have you ever seen it? It's just
no,
beautiful.
I've seen
just the
just
cover.
The cover.
Yeah. It's breathtaking. Yeah,
but the photos have nothing to do with Funny Girl. They're just
no.
Photos.
It's just them being fabulous.
Just yeah. them being fabulous. And were these songs? Did they wind up then when they would play like the in Vegas and stuff? Were they? Was this part of their act? Is that what?
She would do My Man in her act, but that's not mm-hmm. on the album.
What's the difference if I say?
And they did Cornet Man on some TV variety show, and it was just lip-sync to the album. They didn't
so it was really just kind of like a one-off.
But it wasn't. They weren't going to incorporate this into their act that much because the audience wanted the hits.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this was a huge mm-hmm. flop.
Huge flop. Just but you were obsessed with it right away.
I just adored it. How did they crank out these specialty albums? And they seemed so carefully put together. Mm-hmm. They didn't seem like throwaways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I had to get, let me get the country one and the Liverpool one. I didn't care about Sam Cooke. I'd never heard of him.
Yeah. Well, now I want to hear that. Is that one released? I mean, those are good songs.
Yeah. I mean, Diana never gave a bad vocal performance in her life.
Well, I just love the Motown. I mean, I do love Diana so much, but I love the Motown sound so much. And that, you could tell me it was Diana Ross and the Supremes sing Nirvana or, you know, mm-hmm. Weezer. I mean, I would want to hear that. I feel like that sound just, you can paint that over any existing music and it'll be fabulous.
And they stretched. They didn't just do Motown songs per se. Remember they did You Keep Me Hanging On, which was a heavy rock, like a hard rock song.
Set me free, why don't you, babe? Let me be your
But I mean, they put the Motown twist on that, and they did The Happening, which was almost like a 1920s sound.
Right, yeah.
Hey, life, look at me. I can see the real time. Cause when you shook me, took me out of my world, I woke up. Suddenly I just woke up to the happening. When you find it, that you left the future behind. Cause when you got a tender love you don't take care of, then you better beware of the happening.
So they tried everything with the Supremes.
So were you experiencing it on that kind of a sophisticated level, or what was your early experience of the Supremes' Funny Girl album like?
I saw it, first of all, as a through line, like a narrative through line. I hadn't seen Funny Girl. I wasn't going to really Broadway shows at this point.
Movie, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even see the movie when it came out, and I have a horrible story about that. My father and I drove to Manhattan from Brooklyn where we lived, and my father found out it was $4.50, which at the time was a lot, because it was one of those first-run theaters. It wasn't just a regular movie theater. And he said, let's just go back home. And I was crushed.
Oh,
it was
like, my God.
It was the moment I almost turned straight. And I understood that my father didn't want to throw money away. And also, I would have had to sit there and be, like, reveling in this movie as my father made remarks.
Mm-hmm. What kind of remarks?
Oh, she's Jewish.
Oh, really?
She's not attractive. Yeah, okay. Stuff like that. And But I still would have loved Segan. And I would have just blocked him out. But it was heartbreaking for little Mikey. And I didn't see Funny Girl till years later, and at which point I thought it was really the best movie ever made.
Oh, so good. And how do you feel about the movie now?
So, I feel the same way, and I feel it's the greatest performance in a musical ever captured.
Have you guessed yet who's the best yet? If you ain't, I'll tell you one more time. You bet you'll die in all of the world so far. I am the greatest, greatest.
So what about the Diana Ross things that came after she left the Supremes? Where how did you go on that journey? The movies, for example, speaking of...
Okay, well, first of all, musically, it wasn't certain what was going to happen to Diana's solo career. It wasn't a guarantee that she was going to be a superstar, as she turned out to be. The Supremes replaced her with Jeannie Terrell as lead singer. And they had some hits right away. They hit Up the Ladder to the Roof, and Stone Love.
Don't you wanna go?
And then it's like, what's Diana going to do?
Weren't the Supremes kind of interchangeable at that point, though? They'd release an album with different singers and call it the Supremes.
They still had Mary and Cindy. But Jeannie Terrell became the new singer. And she was great, but no one is Diana Ross.
Yeah.
So they were having hits, but it's like, this isn't going to last. And then Diana, when she came out with her solo stuff, it was phenomenal. It was Ain't No Mountain High Enough, totally revamped.
Was that on the first album after the Supremes, Ain't No Mountain
High? I don't want to say that for sure because I'm not sure. But
she had hits right away.
She did. And she still had the glamour. And she obviously had the star quality. This is like Beyonce going solo. Like, it was such a duh from day one. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even want Diana at first to be lead singer in the early days when it was the Primettes.
Right.
They said she was too skinny and she was nasal sounding. Oh. But all the baloney that Flo, may she rest, should have been the lead singer. I disagree with that. It's not like Dreamgirls. Flo did not have a volcanic talent. She was beautiful and she had a sweet voice.
Is she the lead vocal on any of the big hits, Flo?
Only on very unknown stuff that even wasn't released. And Mary had a couple of things here and there. It really was Diana all the way. And then as for the movies, Diana's first movie was Lady Sings the Blues. She played Billie Holiday. She was brilliant.
Right.
She turned out to be a real actor.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't
almost won the Academy Award over Liza.
Yeah,
for
she was supposed to win. And Berry Gordy actually had overhyped Diana.
Oh.
And also, this was a time when African Americans weren't really nominated, but Cicely Tyson was up the same year for Sounder. She was amazing in Sounder.
Oh, so like the black people.
So I actually think it canceled. That's my theory.
Fascinating.
And Liza won, and nobody's going to argue with Liza winning because, Cabaret, that was everything. But I thought, wow, Diana's really going to have an incredible movie career, and she never did. She was going to win, and Barry fucked it up, I swear. It should have been a tie with her, Cicely, and Liza. The other nominees were Maggie Smith for Travels with My Aunt and Liv Ullmann for one of those
Well, they didn't need that
fruity
Oscar.
Films.
They had other Oscars to get, but...
Yeah, Maggie has two. Liv never won, and Cicely never won.
I mean, Liza must have thought you get nominated every time you do a movie at that point. Was Mahogany right after that?
It was sometime after that, and that was a terrible film that I love. I've seen it 20 times. Anthony Perkins is a psychotic gay.
I just recently watched it for the first time. It's pretty crazy.
And it's totally retrograde because at the end she's like, I'll give up everything for my man, Billy Dee Williams. It's like so not feminist. But all the clothes were from Diana's closet. And
But and there's no singing in that one.
And I think it was a hit. Well, she sings, Do You Know Where You're Going?
Right. From
by
Mahogany.
Dory Previn, who wrote the songs for Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah.
And get this, when they came out with the Oscar nominations for Best Song, Do You Know Where I'm Going To, which was themed from Mahogany, was not nominated. And there was such an uproar that they had to retally the votes and say, oh, yeah, you know what? It was nominated.
Amazing.
And
I mean,
I think it won.
Has that ever happened before?
No, but they got called on their bullshit, and they were like, all right, let's nominate. I think it won. We'll have to look that up.
I mean, that is such a...
It's called Do You Know Where You're Going To?
Mm-hmm. The theme from Mahogany.
Theme from Mahogany.
Yeah. But that's just like over the credits, right? That's
yeah, she doesn't not sing in the movie. She does modeling. She's a model and a designer. Mm-hmm. And it was like an old Lana Turner movie.
That movie bombed, were you like, oh, this movie career is not going to take off?
I'm not sure if it was such a bomb, but it was just bad.
Oh, gotcha.
But the next movie she made was years later. She made The Wiz.
Yeah, that's a long time later.
And she was like 65 playing Dorothy. It was just not a good idea.
Yeah.
And it was filmed on location in New York.
I love the art direction of that movie. I love it being set in Harlem instead of Kansas on a farm. You know, it suits that Motown flavor music.
But she played like a teacher who never left home. You thought, well, she's mentally ill. Like, what's wrong? Yeah. This isn't fun to watch.
It's so strange. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a disaster. She never did another movie, though. There was so much talk about her doing The Bodyguard. Originally, it was her and Ryan O'Neal.
Oh, fascinating.
And I don't know why it didn't happen. She was going to remake Diva. Remember that French film about the opera singer?
Oh, is
she was going to make it as a Hollywood film.
Okay.
And I think Diana sabotages, I hate to say, a lot of career opportunities. She's a bit of a diva herself.
Yeah, the song was just nominated. It did not win.
Oh, I wonder what won that year. Maybe The Poseidon Adventure. Morning After.
No, it's another big hit.
But Diana has made TV movies. She made a movie called Double Platinum with Brian Stokes Mitchell and Brandy.
Right, I remember that. That was good. That was the 90s or 2000s, I guess. Already,
yeah, the aughts. And she was good, yeah.
That's interesting that, I mean, she can act.
She has a gift.
And she still could probably do that now if she wanted to.
It's criminal that she didn't have more of a movie career. Liza Minnelli, Hollywood didn't know what to do with.
Yeah. Mm. But Liza, in a way, it's almost more understandable because she's such a freak. And she's been so out of commission mentally.
But it's more that at that point, I mean, Cabaret was an incredible breakthrough for her. But then they didn't know what to do with her. And she was put in terrible movies like New York is terrible, but that was a disaster.
But Rent a Cop and all that. Yeah. But like I mean, Diana, it seems strange that she is so beautiful and she would have been so castable in such a variety of things.
But like I say, I think she puts the kibosh on a lot of projects. Maybe they're not right for her, and I respect her for that, but she should have done more.
Was there anything that you saw where you were like, oh, this should have been Diana?
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, The Favorite, Call Me By Your Name. Everything should have been
Call Me By Your Name.
She should be in everything.
Well, that could be Diana Ross and the Supremes saying Call Me By Your Name.
Well, in fact, when I finally saw the movie A Funny Girl, I was like, Barbara's okay, but Diana would have been better.
No, so okay, but did you stay a devoted fan through the solo stuff? Were you going to concerts? Like, were you that kind of fan?
Oh, yes. And, you know, in the 80s, she had sort of a comeback. She had a whole new wave. I didn't like Endless Love, the duet with Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
Though that was probably her biggest hit of all time. But I liked her string of new...
I'm Coming Out.
It's all, oh, that
boss.
Stuff. Yeah,
yeah, the Boss is the best.
Yeah. And I actually met her on the Intrepid. She had a party when she was doing a run at Radio City. And she came up to me because I was just standing there like drooling. And she's like, hi, I'm Diana Ross. And I was like, I know. And then we just had a chat. And I said, well, I hope your next single is going to be Missing You. That was a pretty song she did about Marvin Gaye having died. Mm. And she goes, as a matter of fact, it is. I was like, so now I say, oh, I convinced her to release that song.
I mean, well, okay, so what about when you were doing the Diana Ross stuff? You know, I mean, that was the beginning of your career. That kind of put you on the map downtown, right? Just being this, like, performer in that scene.
Well, in 1980, I was, like, a little bit bored. And my roommate at the time, who I got through the gay roommate service, was a guitarist. And I was like, well, let's start a band. Let's do a Mickey and Judy. And I loved Motown music. And I said, let's just do Motown covers. It's easy. We don't have to write new songs. And I'll be sort of a white, gay Diana Ross, sort of like Michael Jackson. Too soon?
Never.
And, you know, people say, oh, I saw you do Diana Ross. I wasn't doing Diana Ross.
Mm. So that myth is false.
I wasn't doing
blackface,
thank God.
Right.
No, I was just being a campy gay guy doing I'm Living in Shame. And also we would sprinkle in Ain't Too Proud songs, you know, Get Ready by the Temptations.
So it was a Motown show. It was not a Diana Ross show.
Yeah.
That's a misnomer.
It was a campy gay take on Motown. And occasionally we would work in an original song, but we didn't go very far with that.
And did you write the original songs?
Yeah, and I don't have a gift.
And where were you doing those shows?
All over town. In fact, we were on the same bill with Madonna in 1982. It was a club called Chase Park. It was a Chase Bank turned into a nightclub.
Oh, my God.
Madonna was up and coming at that point, and we were equal in the ads. It was Madonna, The Must.
The Must. Was that the name of the Motown band?
Yeah, and then later, a la Diana Ross and the Supremes, it became Michael Musto and The Must, because I wanted to do everything Diana did.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that. But I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert, or desserts, or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for, like, my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals, too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And so now, like, when you've done these shows, like, at I saw you at Club Cumming, and did you do one at Pangea, too, or did I make that up?
I've appeared there, yeah.
Like, do you ever think about doing like, a full revival of The Must?
No, because, you know, the members kind of broke up, and some of them are gone. And
well, you can replace them like Diana would.
And it sucks.
Yeah, I know good guitarists.
It's like bringing back the plague or something. Like, why would you bring back the Must? Why
did you bring never left?
I now like the format of doing duets and things like that because you have your safety net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
but
that's
I mean,
the show you did at Club Cumming, right? The duets.
Yeah, I've done 4 duet shows so far for charity.
But I mean, you know, the show I do with Countess Luann, you came and you did solos. You didn't need a
and I did
partner.
A Diana Ross song. I did You Can't Hurry Love.
I mean,
oh yeah.
You don't need a safety net. Do you feel
and I
it?
Hate the Phil Collins cover because it's like, I want to be the only white male to cover this thing.
Yes. Well, you're a black woman in my heart.
I am. I really, a black lesbian, actually.
A black lesbian. What about Like, were you there, like, at the famous, like, Central Park concert where she got rained on? Like, was that?
I was.
Yes.
And that was the scariest thing ever because everyone knew it was going to rain, but we didn't know it was going to rain that heavy. Mm. I mean, it was really torrential with lightning, and it just felt like the world was caving in. And Diana, poor thing, was trying to hold it together. Everyone calmed down. You know, people were stampeding to get out of the park like they thought they were going to die. And as a result, they were causing the danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was terrified of being stampeded to death. And Diana, you know, she kept going. The rain makes the flowers to grow because Diana's all about love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless you know her. And, and I remember running to some nearby restaurant, like, what's the restaurant in Central Park West?
Oh, the Tavern on the Green?
Or, no, some other Un de Toi or something. Not Un de Toi, but French name. But anyway, yeah. They let people just hide for cover. They didn't force you to order. That was very cool of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just kind of tried to dry off, and I was in shock because my favorite concert of all time ended in horror.
Oh, my God.
And poor Diana was left there alone, and I was like, I hope she doesn't get electrocuted. She kept singing and talking.
And then she did a makeup concert, right? That was like...
Yeah, and then I was so traumatized, I didn't go back.
You didn't go back?
No.
Wow.
I think there's a big documentary about the whole experience.
Oh, I've got to check that out.
But I saw her 2 years ago in concert at City Center. And she was amazing. She's still in tip-top voice.
Is she?
She did a million costume changes. Well, the great thing is Diana at this point knows that people just want the hits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She just delivers all the hits. She doesn't do a lot of stupid medleys where you just do two lines of each. She really does the whole song.
Right.
My World is Empty Without You, I think, is one of her favorite Supreme
great
songs.
Song.
She does the whole song.
Beautiful.
She then comes back and does a whole Billie Holiday thing, and she nails it just like she did in the movie. And her only original or non-Diana song that she does is I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor.
Right, which she did cover. I mean, I'm sure in her
And she would bring up Rhonda, her daughter. Rhonda would come out and sing a few notes.
Okay.
Which was sweet. Rhonda's the singer. Then you have Tracy Ellis Ross is the actor from Blackish. Chudney was a model, I think. A misspelled model. And
a misspelled model. That's my album.
I always look through my spice rack. What should I name my kid? How about
smudged.
Some cilantro?
Cilantro.
And then Diana has the twins, the cute guys. One of them is married to Ashley Simpson.
No, and
Arne Ness was the father. He was the Swedish guy, I think. He passed in a skiing accident. But
and one is named Ross, right? Isn't that the first name?
Yeah, like Ross Ross.
Yeah.
Ross Ness. He's a Ross Ness monster. But they're gorgeous and they're talented because she used to bring them out in concert and they would do like break dancing and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Judy Garland Christmas special stuff.
I mean, I worship Diana Ross.
What about like just going back to her like with Broadway stuff? Like I remember like I have some live album, must be from like late 70s, early 80s, where she does like a whole chorus line section. And like how did you feel about all that stuff?
Well, let me tell you, please, people, go on YouTube. She did a leading ladies medley. Have you ever seen this?
No, but I feel like
it's from one of the specials. Like I think the special was called TCB or something, Taking Care of Business. She did a couple of specials. One of them was with the Temptations. Her leading lady medley is incredible because she does Doing What Comes Naturally. And for each show tune that she does, it's a whole different setup with incredible wigs and costumes.
Oh, my God.
And it has an opening song. It's a leading lady, I always wanted to be a Broadway leading lady. The rootin' tootinist Annie or a madcap name or Dolly.
No.
That sad and funny girl Fanny, who she had already played. Nellie Forbush or unsinkable Molly.
Wow.
I caviar time, it's Vogue, bizarre time, it's Merman Lansbury, Bird and Bailey, superstar time. That neon spelling your name again, a special glow. When plumbers from Poughkeepsie get scalped for seeing you starring gypsy. Housewives take vacations to give sweet charity wild ovations. To be a leading lady in a great big Broadway show.
Oh, like God. Some gay that guy song. Wrote that for her special.
It sounds almost like a Jewel Stein, I swear
dove
to you.
Dove in.
So
it wasn't, I mean, Holland Does Your Holland. That's
would you? I mean, would do you have any fantasy of her doing? I guess they just did Dolly, but could, you know, could she do MAME?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, she'd be a great MAME.
She could do Dolly. She could do MAME. She could do Waiting for Godot. She could do anything in my book.
Call
and
by
if
your
she
name.
Ever passes, just shoot me, because life will not be worth living.
So what if you mean that?
Oh, now some psycho out there.
No, but I mean, like, I mean, I feel that way about Patti LuPone, you know, and I have so many aspirations and my emotional roller coaster. You know, I'm on the ride as the news comes in, pro or con Patti, on a week to week, month to month, whatever. I loved in the Tonys when they name checked her and the two things, you know, even though she wasn't there, she was there. But so, like, how is that for you as a Diana fan in 2019? Like, what are you hoping for? What are you scared of? Is that a lyric to the thing
from Mahogany? I think she has a new attitude where she's just happy to be who she is. Mm-hmm. She's not pushing anymore. She's not self-sabotaging anymore. Mm-hmm. She's giving her fans what they want. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting any gigantic renaissance or some reinvention. That's mm-hmm. not what she's about at this point. She's proven already that she can do anything.
Mm-hmm. But she's not doing that stuff. She's just doing...
She's touring.
She's touring a lot.
But she'll always come out with new music.
I mean, she does, do you get excited about the new album?
I don't, I have to admit. I turn on my idols when it comes to their new music after a certain point. Because it just isn't of the same quality. I'm sorry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, could you listen to the new Madonna stuff?
I mean, this album I haven't listened to yet, but I have been with her. Like, I loved the Rebel Heart. I loved that album. I loved that tour.
Okay.
But Madonna is, I think, I have an easier time accepting new Madonna because I don't care that much to be, I mean, I care, but it's limited. You know, I'm more into the idea of Madonna than even any of the music, you know?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite Diana Ross songs is It's My Turn.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great one, yeah.
It's my turn, with no more room for lies. For years I've seen my life, someone else's eyes. And now it's my turn, to try and find my way. And if I should get lost, at least I'll hold today. It's my turn.
Oh, God.
That's one of my karaoke go-tos.
She kills me with that.
That I always read into that song as being about her turning the page on Barry and facing the new decade with independence.
Oh, she's a method actor because she really digs into her soul for every lyric. Upside down, you're turning me. I don't know what that's about.
I mean, but so, okay, well, that was at one point, that was a new song. I mean, when did you stop caring about the new music?
When it started being what seemed like self-produced kind of elevator music, you know, without really the great producers working with her, because let's face it, they're fickle. They'll move on to the new talent.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to move to work with whoever the new Luther Vandrosses are, or David Foster's. Get back with Nile Rodgers.
Yeah,
He did Upside Down and I'm Coming Out.
I mean, who is he working with now?
Oh, he does Pharrell Williams. He's hotter than ever.
So he probably doesn't want to do a Diana Ross track.
And of course, I love Diana in We Are the World.
Yes.
That was one of her finer moments.
Sure. But I mean, already that's 35 years ago.
I'm just plucking randomly any Diana memory. It's like, it's all good.
I mean, so you really are, you're happy with her doing what she's doing. You don't have an agenda for the rest of the Diana Ross.
Look, she has earned the right to do whatever she wants at this point.
Yeah.
And I do get a better vibe from her now. Like, she's calm. She's at peace. If you read an interview with her, it's just love, love, love. She doesn't dish. She doesn't have any grudges.
It does surprise me she's not being cast, or she probably doesn't want to, but she's not, you know, doing, like, a Hello Dolly or Sunset Boulevard.
Or what about
in real life?
What about even, like,
she's not doing in Norma Desmond. Yeah.
But why hasn't she been on Black-ish? Couldn't she play... you know, some aunt or cousin or something, like that would seem.
She
natural.
Probably doesn't want to be like horning in on Tracy's thing.
Sure, like
or Tracy
one,
doesn't want her
two.
Horning in.
But that show is now an established, long running hit. Tracy's completely. There's a generation that doesn't even know Diana that knows Tracy. So Diana could do that. I don't think there's anything vulnerable there.
I don't see her doing a lot of guest appearances anymore. I don't think she's into it. One of the highlights of my life was seeing the Supremes as nuns on Tarzan. with Ron Ely, who turned me gay, along with the Supremes turning me gay. He was a hot fucking stud in a loincloth. Ron Ely, E-L-Y. Yeah. He starred on TV as Tarzan.
Was like a Tarzan variety show?
No, it was like a half-hour, dramatic series. Mm. And he had just the most beautiful body swinging on that vine. Mm. And there was a special episode with the Supremes as nuns in Africa.
That's so
and they
random.
Sang, they managed to work some songs like, "The Lord helps those who help themselves."
Okay, this is
amen,
a must watch.
Amen.
A must.
A little boy was very sad. He felt so all alone. He had no one to play with, no friends to call his own. His loneliness just grew and grew. He cried most every night. "What's wrong with me?" he asked himself. He prayed with all his might. "The Lord helps those who help themselves. Amen."
So between, like, Diana and Funny Girl, this is now Diana and the Hottest Man Who Ever Lived. As I'm entering puberty, I just exploded. I became a one-man pride parade.
Showers of just pride.
I needed a lot of showering after that.
I mean, but so...
And the idea of Diana as a nun was sort of semi-hilarious.
Yeah. That's funny. To me, maybe it's because, like, my first experience of her was The Wiz, which was, like, a big movie for me when I was little, even though now I can appreciate it's, you know, not a good iteration.
Yeah.
But I think of her as being like prudish like that. Like, to me, a nun seems like a natural, you know, when I hear about her getting arrested for pot, like in Phoenix or Maui or whatever that is, I'm always like, what?
Well, she has in the past had a few ice cubes in her glass, I would say. But what I loved about the nuns is they definitely had like fabulous eyelashes and 60s makeup. Mm. It was like Liz Taylor and Cleopatra. You know, she looked more 60s than whatever she was supposed to be.
I guess the artistic integrity of the Tarzan Weekly series wasn't that tight.
I bought it.
Yeah.
And Diana always was a tasteful star.
Yes.
You know, I hate to become Nancy Reagan now, but it's like, I like the fact that there was always like a stamp of quality on everything she did, except The Wiz.
Except The Wiz. Maybe she was burnt.
The Wiz was so badly directed by Sidney Lumet. It's like, why would you have him direct a musical, first of all?
Well, they did that a lot.
Get the guy who did Network.
Yeah. You know?
The guy who did 12 Angry Men. He'd be great to do The Wiz. Yeah, they got John Huston to do Annie.
Yeah.
Sir Richard Attenborough. Get the guy who did Gandhi to do Chorus
Line.
Yeah, no. But the weird thing in The Wiz is when Eveline is singing "Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News," and she shot from like a 20-yard long shot.
Yeah.
What is happening here? This is like at the end of Shaney Wallace's big number at Oliver, when the camera pulls away, and I even talked to Shaney about it.
Oh, yeah,
now I'm dropping all the big names. And she's like, I don't know, I guess it was art at the time. It was considered art. She wasn't happy about it. Even Madonna and Evita, when they cut away her big ending of "Don't Cry For Me."
Oh, over the crowd, though.
Yeah, I mean, that was screaming for a close-up.
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't.
You were like, pull away.
You know, I actually like
Bring Back Patty.
Evita. I mean,
it's our best film because she doesn't talk.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You're right.
It's like a feature-length music video.
But that's what it should be. I mean, that musical with no dialogue, it's, you know, song, and it's not like an opera. I mean, those are all songs. It's song after song. I think that was the right way to make the movie. I mean,
yeah.
All the things that I think were hard about that movie, they nailed. And then the easy stuff that they could have just stolen from Broadway, they messed up.
But you know, when Ken Russell was originally attached to direct it,
with Liza DeBieva,
Robert Stigwood insisted on Elaine Page to play Evita, which is like absurd. She's not box office.
She's not anything.
Oh, stop. And Ken Russell said, "Well, let me just bring in Liza Minnelli for screen test, and I'll convince you you don't want Elaine Page."
Yeah.
And Liza flew down like to the Caribbean, and Ken Russell, I interviewed him before his passing, and he said she gave the most incredible screen test in the history of screen tests. Wow. And Stigwood was so stubborn, the producer, that he just said, "Sorry, I want Elaine Page." And never happened.
And that's the reason the first attempt fell apart.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it just never got
there. Because then supposedly there's an amazing audition tape from Meryl Streep, and there's supposed to be a decent one from Michelle Pfeiffer, too. That I think those were like Oliver Stone era.
If Evita was like a Valley girl.
Don't cry for Argentina. Don't have a cow.
Oh, jeez.
But
Well, remember when Chicago was going to be Goldie Hawn and was it Liza?
It was Goldie and Liza, but then also I heard Goldie and Madonna.
And they wanted a star in every cell.
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess they got Cheetah.
They got Cheetah.
20 years later.
She was happy to be included. Did you like that movie, Chicago?
I did. I don't like that kind of frenetic editing. I hated Moulin Rouge and I'm dreading the show. Mm-hmm. But it worked for Chicago, though I thought everything was enhanced. Like Renee Zellweger probably doesn't sing that well. Richard Gere doesn't dance that well.
All right. Well, you brought her up. So.
Let's talk about Judy.
Yeah.
I didn't like End of the Rainbow.
Really?
Is it based on End of the Rainbow?
Oh, I didn't think it was. Is it?
Think so.
Same time period of Judy's life.
Yeah. I mean, I liked End of the Rainbow. I know that's like sacrilegious, a Judy fan, but.
Well, the woman, Tracy, was such a nightmare to me.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was supposed to do 2 talkbacks with her. And I did the first one and wrote it up on my blog because, hello, it's people there have social networks. Like, this is not a private thing.
Yeah.
And I put a plug for the second one. When I show up for the second one, she goes, you should not have written that up. People should have to pay for this. And she was really mean. And then we had to go on stage, and I was going to, like, just leave and say, fuck you. But then I realized she had just lost the Tony to Nina Arianda. Wow. Number one. Number two, they had just announced it was closing.
Wow. But still.
So she was in a mood. I'm so ungracious, projecting. I thought.
Oh, my God.
I'm so disappointed to hear that. You know, she was just in Follies at the National Theater, and so I guess she's doing MAME somewhere in London
now. What did she play in Follies?
Carlotta.
Was she good?
I thought she was
great. I only saw her on the video production, but no, it was not Judy-esque. It could have used a little more Judaism.
I liked Polly Bergen. Did you like Polly Bergen?
Yes, I loved Polly Bergen. I didn't like that production, but I liked Polly Bergen a lot. Actually, I liked Elaine Page even in that.
She was good till she got too angry with it as the song went on. Mm. It's like, we get it. You want to be different than Yvonne DiCarlo.
Yeah.
Like when Deborah Monk did Ladies Who Lunch and just made it angry.
That was not a good
Yeah, it's like, just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the best I'm Still Here is Nancy Walker on that album.
Yeah, I was just in a fight with some people on Facebook yesterday. There was the Nancy Walker camp, and then people were saying Carol Burnett. That was the alternate.
She was good, too.
Yeah,
but Nancy Walker made it transcendent. You can't see her, which is good, because when she sings I Was a Slow-Eyed Vamp and you're looking a little bounty picker up
in the Scrabble letters.
Ida Morgenstern, yeah.
Sondheim concert. Well, I wish that was on video.
The other day we saw 54 Below, we saw Marilyn May do
Amazing. She's amazing,
great.
But and Eartha Kitt used to do the best version.
Yeah.
And Elaine Stritch when she could remember the words.
Yeah. Right.
With Elaine Stritch, it was too cliche. Like, you know, we know you're going to sing this. Yeah, we're going to do Broadway, baby. Well, here's a revelation. Last year, I went to see Mary Wilson from the Supremes at the Carlisle.
Oh, wow.
I'd never really seen a whole show of hers, like in a sit-down setting like that. And she's brilliant. I never gave her the credit.
What kind
for
of stuff
being
did she
that
sing?
Talented. Mostly standards.
Because she does that with Jim Gavin, that Lena Horne show. I think that they've toured like Adelaide Cabaret, like all over the world and stuff.
Yeah, she didn't really. She did Stormy Weather and did a lot of standards, jazz, blues, gospel. And she was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And is a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to see Diana Ross do is get into Glengarry Glen Ross with Patti LaBelle.
Hello.
I mean,
would that be great?
Yes. It was just like all the like unbearable diva bitches in one cast.
Sarah Jessica.
Anybody who ever got in a fight with anybody is going to be
Cardi
in this
B.
cast. Yeah. Sarah Jessica and Kim Cattrall.
Yeah. But when Company ended in London, Patty tweeted, because I read her tweets.
Yeah,
and is she following anyone? No, is no I followed funny. By 8 million people yeah. followers?
Zero. You're kind. It's like 45,000.
Okay, whatever. But she had tweeted, like, I'm going to miss these people, as if it was over. And then right after that, they announced Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't believe anything she says about that kind of stuff. You know, she's retiring from musicals. She'll never sing again.
Unless another one offers.
Yeah, Patty's, and she would admit it herself, not a good indicator of where her career will go, you know, 5 minutes later. Well, Michael, you're amazing, and we're so thrilled.
I think we went off topic of the Funny Girl album. But.
Well, that's okay. It all springs forward from Funny Girl. Do you have any...
Do you want to play Dolly Concert Kill?
Oh, yeah, we have to play Dolly Concert Kill. So you know the game Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Yes.
So we have a version called Dolly Concert Kill, where we'll give you three female performers. You choose one to see as Dolly Levi, one to see in a concert at her peak in her career, and one to kill.
Okay.
So we'll definitely give you Diana Ross.
Yeah, yeah.
And Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
And for the third, Liza Minnelli.
There you go.
Okay, so Diana, Barbara, and Liza, Dolly Concert Kill.
Well, we've already seen Barbara's Hello Dolly in the movie, and I actually like
it. This is on stage, so you could have a fresh...
Okay, well,
you could
have, she's whatever, closer to the age of the character times three.
Whatever era of the performer you want as well.
Yeah.
Okay, but having seen Barbara, she's going to give you pretty much the same. True. And I like the movie. I'm the only one.
We like it, too.
Okay.
You like it.
So for Barbara, I would say Concert in her prime, which I saw, and it was amazing. Diana, I would love to see her as Hello Dolly.
Oh, yeah.
Or in anything. And I hate to say this, I love Liza, but she seems to be doing like a slow suicide, so...
You're just going to help her out.
Assisted suicide. That is awful. I did not mean that, and I didn't even say it.
Hashtag Michael Musto wants to kill Liza Minnelli.
Right.
I once got a letter from David Guest from his lawyer saying cease and desist, saying that he's gay, he is not, and how dare you. And I turned it to my editor-in-chief of The Voice, and he laughed and ripped it up and threw it into the air like confetti. He married Liza Minnelli. He's gay.
I mean, it's required, right?
And I love Liza. She actually was performing at the Neiman Marcus opening at the Hudson Yards.
Oh,
and I was there and didn't even know. No one had warned me. I'm wandering around Hudson Yards opening, not knowing, going the Neiman Marcus,
and
Liza.
You hear,
ring them bells, yeah. I hope they gave her some free clothes.
I'm sure they paid a lot of money for that.
I bet. Yeah.
She doesn't get
that. But that's hopeful because it means she is willing to come back to New York and do appearances.
But I mean, for Neiman Marcus opening, they must have paid her a couple $100,000, right?
A lot.
And
and you know, she's big on the room service. She's very
big. She's big on the room service. Me too. No credit card.
Any of us, when we get one of those offers, we just take advantage.
Yeah. Mine always makes me put down my own card for room service. I've never been treated.
Oh, I hate that because then I don't order anything.
Yeah, it's not as fun. Well, Michael, you're amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having
We're thrilled.
Me.
Yes.
We're
Do
thrilled.
You want to plug anything or social media, et cetera?
On Twitter, I am Mikey Musto. And I'm also on Facebook. I hate Instagram. Don't even bother me.
I was surprised. I was looking for you on Insta.
No, I'm on, but I just think it's a complete waste of time. So don't bother me there. Thank you.
But Mikey Musto on Twitter. Yes. Get all the tea, children.
All the tea.
Serving it all. Bring it.
Yay. Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for cabaret goddess Natalie Douglas coming in to chat about Nina Simone's Forbidden Fruit.
Other upcoming guests include 4-time Tony-winning lighting designer Kevin Adams, Tony Award-winning lyricist and director Scott Whitman, and Tony-winning star Laura Benanti.
This episode was recorded at CDM Studios in New York City and was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer, BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
It's Nolan with an A, isn't it? Ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at supsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.